Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
All them dogs are counting down. About to put the anchor down. Hotty toddy, who's it gonna be? Cowbells and swamp.
You know what that music means? That's the open to our next guest, Paul Feinbaum Show. Every day starting at 2 o'clock right as we get off the air. You can hear it on 94.9 Monday through Friday from 2 until 6. And we talk with Paul this time every Thursday. He's brought to you by Gary Force Acura and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Paul, how you doing?
Pretty well, guys. How about you?
Well, we were a little bit surprised. Not really that Derek Mason is not going to be retained, but probably surprised at the timing. We kind of figured it was going to be after the season, but Vanderbilt decided after the Missouri game, which was not a good showing in a 41-0 loss, that they were going to move on from Derek Mason. Were you surprised?
I was, but once you start thinking about it, I mean, you lose to Missouri 41-0, which, you know, pretty much tells you all you need to know. Well, I think you already knew all you needed to know. But the biggest reason I think now is recruiting. Because the season goes longer than normal, it would already be over for Vanderbilt pretty much every year, but that strange year when they get a bowl game. So the recruiting clock is ticking. There's very little time left, less than 2 weeks. So I don't know if that played a huge role, but at least it gets the school in motion to be able to get somebody in here pretty quickly.
What do you think Vanderbilt should be looking for in their next coach, in your opinion?
I think youth is important, someone who, you know, can energize this place. And I know Mason at times, you know, was able to capture that. But in the end, it became the same old story. And you really never could tell the difference between that rare Vanderbilt win and the loss, because Derek always said the same thing. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's always great if you can bring somebody that, you know, has a reputation. But, you know, this is not a job many people covet. You guys understand that fairly well. So, you know, I think you need someone who can not only do all that, but hopefully slowly or quickly, however, you know, course they can take, maybe convince the university that football is important. It's not just an intramural sport, which sometimes I wonder if the university views it as anything more than that.
Well, the people you talk to, do you believe that? Look, there's no doubt. We've talked about it a bunch on this show. It really doesn't matter who they hire. If the higher-ups, the people above the head coach, are not going to do what it takes to help that coach, you know, win at this level, and nobody's saying win at the at the level like Alabama or Georgia or Florida, but there can be somewhere in between, right? Not where they've been, not where those teams are, but somewhere in between. If they're not going to put in the commitment, I mean, do you believe that there is somebody out there that can convince them to do what you need to do at this level to try to help them get better?
No, because they're making the decision to bring that person in, so you would probably think, you know, thinking twice about all the good qualities you would need, and then bring someone in that is only going to cause you problems. And I've known the Vanderbilt administration over the years, and you know, sometimes I've understood their approach, and most of the time I have not. But right now I think it's a pretty desperate situation where everyone else is just light years ahead of them. I mean, if they started today, with a complete overhaul, I mean, they'd still be 3 or 4 years behind.
So when you look at South Carolina and Vanderbilt, I mean, once again, it's going to be Florida and Georgia in the East and then everybody else. And so they're in the everybody else category. So I ask you, with that being said, what in your mind, in your opinion, is the gap between the South Carolina job and the Vanderbilt job? Are they on even ground? Is there a huge gap? What do you think in your mind the differences in the two jobs?
There's a significant gap for one reason. It's the brand new football facility that South Carolina has. And it's beautiful. I mean, it should be. I mean, they spent, you know, tens of millions of dollars on it, and it just opened about a year ago. And that's what the difference is. When you bring families in, when you bring recruits in, what are they interested in? I mean, the stadium matters, but Vanderbilt's not going to get over that anytime soon. But, you know, it's where do you work out? Where do you hang out? Where do you have team meetings? And right now, that's the problem. And almost everyone else, even Florida has been slow to change. Georgia took a long time before they started making changes. But now everyone is in business. And South Carolina completed theirs about a year ago. And what does Vanderbilt have to show? I was there about a year ago in those facilities, and I was pretty underwhelmed, and I think so far everyone else is as well. So that's really where it lies. And I mean, you might in bringing in someone get lucky. I mean, nobody really expected James Franklin to do what he did. He was a coordinator at Maryland.
Yeah. Do you think? And I agree with everything you're saying about this. About this job, and hopefully we're all wrong and that they are willing to do what it takes. So I ask you this to say, maybe is this a hint that maybe it could be going in the right direction? There's a brand new chancellor. Obviously, Candace Story Lee is now the brand new athletics director. But the fact that Derek Mason was still owed money and still had years left on the contract, and they're going to pay him millions of dollars to go away, which is, you know, it's not something that exactly Vanderbilt's standing in line to do, and they cut him loose, like I said, with still games remaining. Do you think maybe that's a sign or a hint that they want to change the way they've been going about their business, or no?
I think it's a good sign. The worst sign to me would have been, Candace Story Lee coming out and saying, we appreciate Coach Mason, and we're not happy with the record, but he graduates players, and, you know, this is a pandemic. And we would have just been, oh, my goodness, here we go again. I mean, I do think something went down, and I don't really know what it was. But I think, Vanderbilt, I love David Williams, but, you know, he had been there a long time, and he was going to protect Derek. And then, you know, the calamity of errors that occurred after that didn't help matters very much. So, I think – if you wanted to be an optimist, you could find some silver lining here. And I would concur. It's better than what it was. And the problem with Mason, it just was never going to be any different. Maybe you'd sneak a win in there now and then. They'd play hard. But it just became unwatchable. And, you know, a couple weeks ago I was saying to someone, man, Vandy really played well against Kentucky. I mean, they still lost. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, they went down to the final play of the game against Alabama. They played well against Florida. They always play well against Florida. But, yeah, I think this was a good day, but let's see where they go next.
Talking to Paul Feinbaum and talking some college football. So, Paul, your assessment on the big picture here, because I know Texas A&M and Florida are very interested in what happens in the Big Ten. Do you think the Big Ten will change their rules if, in fact, you know, what amounts to their best teams don't play enough games by the rules they have now to qualify for the Big Ten championship game?
I do. And, you know, this weekend is critical. Ohio State absolutely has to get this game in. And then next week, if Michigan is unable to play, and right now that's a big if based on the cancellation yesterday, the Big Ten then has to find them a game. And I know that sounds crazy, and it sounds like the system is being rigged in favor of one school. But guess what? I don't know what the schedule looks like, but are you going to let a game go on between two middling teams and versus letting Ohio State get another game and mixing and matching? I mean, that's what I would do. It happens every day. I mean, we saw this morning, Coastal Carolina losing Liberty and getting BYU. You have to be flexible, and I think the Big Ten needs to go that direction. It isn't as if there is another school who is really vying for the Big Ten. There isn't. Northwestern now has lost. They're out of it. So you have to find Ohio State a way to get the games in, whether they play for the Big Ten championship or not. They have to play this week and next, And if they play next week, they'll get in the championship game, because otherwise you're just wasting your season. And I know that people cringe when they hear me say what I'm about to say, but the Big Ten came back for Ohio State. They didn't come back for Rutgers or Maryland. They came back to give Ohio State a shot at the CFP.
I know you've had a lot of fun at the committee's expense, but do you think this will be the toughest decision that they've had to make in terms of determining the four by the time we get there?
It looks that way. Now, there have been very few close calls. The first year there was a debate between member Baylor and Ohio
State. Right. If anything, there's been a discussion for who should be number four or five. Right. There's been that a few times.
Then there was the Penn State Ohio State conversation, and then Alabama and Ohio State. But I mean, this year it could really be an issue. You could have Ohio State versus Texas A&M. You could, the Cincinnati question lingers out there. So much depends. Texas A&M is not done yet. I mean, they're at Auburn Saturday, and I think that is a tricky game. They play Tennessee later on, which probably isn't a tricky game. But if Florida takes, either wins against Alabama or they're out. So no, it doesn't matter what Florida, looks like or talks like, as long as they win. But A&M is the wild card right now. And I think there could be quite a conversation going on. And by the way, don't read too much into what the committee chairman said the other day. I mean, it's nonsensical what they say now, because it's all going to be moot in 2 weeks. But what he said was that if Texas A&M had looked better against LSU, they would have moved A&M up to number four.
We've tossed these names out. I noticed that you had Bruce Feldman on your show. And I've read his article, and his names sort of concur with a lot of the names that have come out in different places. So of Clark Lee, Vanderbilt graduate, Will Healy, up-and-comer who was down the road at Austin Peay, Jamie Chadwell, Coastal Carolina, Charles Huff, who was on James Franklin's staff briefly. Any name jump out at you among those that you think would be the best choice for Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I don't know Lee, so I'll defer to Bruce on that. And, Chadwell, to me, has done a really good job at Coastal. But I do know Will Healy. I've interviewed him a couple of times. And, he is really impressive. He's done a nice job I would say almost an impossible situation. The city of Charlotte doesn't care about that university in terms of football. You have a pro team here. You understand that. He was at Chattanooga. He's got a lot of ties to the state. And, by the way, I don't know how much that matters. I mean, I guess it does matter if you're a graduate. That looks good at the press conference. But people need to quit thinking about the press conference and think about what the program will look like in 2 to 3 years. Mike Leach won the press conference. What's he done since then?
Hmm. Paul Feinbaum is with us from the SEC Network and ESPN. You can hear a show 2 to 6 weekdays on ESPN 94.9 here in our market. So, Paul, as Tennessee had another extra bye week, now they take on Florida. The quarterback conversation will continue probably until the end of the season. Florida being the contender that they are, what do you need to see out of the Vols to make you think, okay, that maybe they're starting to turn a corner, even though this is going to be an uphill battle?
Right now, what Jeremy Pruitt is in the midst of is a beauty contest. If he can hang, if his team can hang with Florida, everyone agrees Florida is a major contender this year, then I think he maybe calms people down. Phil Fulmer talking about the situation and pleading for patience. It's not going to change one opinion. But this is a big moment for him. I've always felt this was the key game of the year, because Florida is that one school that matters so much to Tennessee fans. And I realize Alabama used to, but with Saban there, you just have to move on from that conversation. And if Tennessee can be competitive, that's where we are right now in the Jeremy Pruitt era. Can they be competitive? Because the national media is writing him off. I mean, they have been cruel to him, and he's being propped up, and he needs to give those few loyal supporters, and they are important, Fulmer, president, boosters that matter in Knoxville. He needs to give them something to bite into. I mean, he's made a mess out of the quarterback situation. he hasn't really handled himself well in many regards. So Saturday is a, you know, could be a defining moment. So how do we leave the season with him moving toward next year? If they lose this game and lose to A&M, fans have to have something to dig their teeth into, and a good performance Saturday would be it.
Do you think that Vanderbilt and South Carolina making moves in the SEC in a pandemic, does that change the way of thinking for not just Tennessee, but another, let's just say another school of, well, they did it, they paid the buyout, maybe that's the right move for us. Plus, you know, the fan base is going to look at that too and say, well, hey, they did it, why can't you?
I don't think it will matter in Knoxville. The only thing that could happen that could possibly tilt the balance is an absolute disastrous finish. I'm talking about just getting blown out by Florida, looking bad against A&M, and then losing to Vanderbilt. At that point, I would like to see Philip Fulmer stand in front of the media and give a reason why to retain Jeremy Pruitt. But other than that, I can't see any set of circumstances that would cause a seismic shift in the mentality of Big Orange boosters and administration.
I feel like that you and I are on the same page with this, and I won't put words in your mouth, but I have been disappointed in Philip Fulmer because this is his hire, and I understand the circumstances in which Jeremy Pruitt was hired, but there's got to be some responsibility on his end. He gives the contract extension. That was a head-scratcher that we've discussed, but do you kind of feel that way too, that maybe he could handle some things better and he needs to take some ownership?
Yeah, he understands it. Unfortunately, ADs become cheerleaders, especially when they make the hire. And, you know, that's the role he's forced into today. But, you know, ultimately, Philip Fulmer is not the final arbiter here. And, you know, he's lived through this. You know, he went from national championship coach to on the hot seat to getting fired. So he is going to be more sensitive to Jeremy Pruitt, but in the end, if this is a total collapse, hopefully I won't be able to say that the next time we talk, but if it is, then someone will tell Philip Fulmer what to do.
Absolutely. He's Paul Feinbaum of the SEC Network and ESPN. Here a show 2-6 on ESPN 94.9. Paul, appreciate it as always, and we'll do it again next week.
A pleasure, guys. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Paul Feinbaum, a lot going on in the SEC and some big games this weekend. But, Darren, you have a word as we go to the break.
I've got a word that we're going to make a little bit of an announcement on the other side, so you're going to want to be listening to that here in just a moment. I actually watched both of these teams in the background. I could watch them play. Gonzaga, although that win may have come in a big loss to one of their best players. They squeaked out a win against West Virginia, and then Baylor played after them. Gonzaga and Baylor are going to go toe-to-toe, probably for the top ranking in college basketball. And DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving all you college basketball fans who sign up right now a chance to win $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win that big matchup. Plus, you'll get a deposit bonus up to $1,000 when signing up and using the promo code 1025GAME. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME when you sign up for your shot to turn $1 into $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win. Once again, use that code 1025GAME during the sign-up process for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.